Un maranatha to the Lord of Ghosts. Nasta Shochaya, being devoid of all cleanliness. Durine, heart filled with nasty things. Data was given. Bata, alas, Maya. By me. Sadvi. Sati. Chodete. Being requested. Parameshthina. By the Supreme Teacher Brahma. Translation: on the request of Lord Brahma, I handed over my chaste daughter to him. Although he is devoid of all cleanliness and his heart is filled with nasty things. She can repeat. On the request of Lord Brahma, I handed over my chaste daughter to him. Although he is devoid of all cleanliness, and his heart is filled with nasty things. So purport by his divine grace, Srila Prabhupada. It is the duty of parents to hand over their daughters to suitable persons just befitting their family tradition and cleanliness, gentle behavior, wealth, social position, etc. Daksha was repentant that on the request of Brahma, who was his father, he had handed over his daughter to a person who, according to his calculation, was nasty. He was so angry that he did not acknowledge that the request was from his father. Instead, he referred to Brahma as Parameshti, the supreme teacher in the universe. Because of his temperament of gross anger, he was not even prepared to accept Brahma as his father. In other words, he accused even Brahma of being less intelligent because he had advised Daksha to hand over his beautiful daughter to such a nasty fellow. In anger, one forgets everything, and thus Daksha in anger not only accused the great Lord Shiva, but criticized his own father, Lord Brahma, for his not very astute advice that Daksha hand over his daughter to Lord Shiva. Okay. So, tasma unmada natthoya nashta shochai hatu rite tata bhattam ya sudvi chorite parameshtina. So, om agana chivarandasha gananjana shlakaya chakshur unmiritam yena Tas my Shri Gurave Namaha. So, it's very interesting. Of course, in the Vedic system, there is the consideration, as we've been speaking about before, of hierarchy. Hierarchy means that someone is lower and someone is higher, or people are different. And we spoke about this previously in class. We talked about what natural hierarchies and imposed hierarchies, right? Everybody remembers that? No, you don't remember that. Okay. That means a natural hierarchy means when people by their nature are higher or lower than other people. And imposed hierarchy means when people just are given a particular position because of birth or social status or something like that, higher or lower. Okay. So there's been some attempts in the modern day and age by different systems, of course, communism is one of those systems, to make everybody equal in society. I was listening to one class that Prabhupada was giving, the devotees were presenting the philosophy of Mao Tse-tung. Some of you may remember him. He was before your time, but anyway. He was the person in charge of China, you know, the great leader. And everybody would walk around in China with these little red books, waving them in the air. I don't know if you remember that. Anyway, and his proposal was that, you know, we should all be completely equal in social status and salary, in education and everything like that. And he actually had some sincerity. He was living a rather austere life, which is different than most leaders of society. Most leaders of society, they take advantage of their position. And not only don't lead an austere life, but lead a quite opulent life, and also they salt a lot of money in bank accounts, you know, in Swiss bank accounts and things like that. And you generally find that. Even in Russia was like that. In Russia, you had the leaders of society, the Communist Party, they had their dachas. That means that little houses on the seaside where they enjoy life. So they always took advantage of their position. But Mao, he was quite a sincere soul. Not sincere in Krishna consciousness, but sincere in his endeavor to impose this communistic regime. But basically, it's not possible. Prabhupada was very adamant in this regard. It is actually not possible because it's always going to be someone who's a teacher or someone who's a student. But Mao was saying, so well, sometimes the students should teach the teachers, and sometimes the teachers should teach the students, and sometimes the intellectuals should go out in the field and plow the fields. It's an interesting concept, actually. He tried to impose this equality. He said, well, if you're going to be a teacher intellectual, you should actually spend a few years, you know, plowing the fields. But that does not make everyone equal. That does not make a teacher a farmer or a farmer a teacher. It just makes people frustrated. Because when you're engaged in doing something that's not your nature, first of all, you're not going to be enthusiastic. Second of all, it's going to be really not only frustrating, it's going to be drive you crazy. You know, I remember one time that devotees tried to get me to plow fields or something like that. And it was, it was boring. You know, what's food for one person is poison for another person. It's a fact. I mean, I'm not saying that plowing fields is bad. It's actually very nice. We should have an agriculturally based society. There's no question about it. That's Varnashram culture. But it's not that everybody's doing everyone else's activities. They're, you know, people are intellectual. People want some intellectual stimulation. They're not going to be very happy just getting behind a plow with a bullock all day long. They're going to be... Anyway, they're going to be a little frustrated. Nor is a Vaishya going to be happy if you stick him in an intellectual situation. You know, Vaishya is put in an intellectual situation. He's going to think of selling the books. Of course, if they're Prabhupada's books, that's a pretty good idea anyway. But, you know, he's just not going to be happy. His mind is not going to, he's not going to be able to concentrate. Because the whole point in devotional service is to be able to concentrate and meditate on your service for Krishna, to be absorbed in some particular service. And that service should be according to your nature. Prabhupada states that. And if we have something that's not according to our nature, we're just not going to be happy in devotional service. So we should all seek a service that's according to our nature. Anyway, so everyone's different. And to impose this equality on everyone is kind of stupid. But to impose unnatural hierarchy is also stupid. But just like in India, they have this unnatural hierarchy. Of course, that's called the caste system. It's not only that they have the... it's interesting. It's not only that they have the four castes that we're accustomed to, you know the four castes, Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra, for those of you who haven't been in the Krishna consciousness movement long enough to understand that. But they've actually come up with thousands of castes. Anyone who's been in India, it's just amazing all these castes that they've come up with. And I was asking someone about, you know, what are the different names of the castes when I was in Fiji this time. They said, well, they have, one is called the Prajapati caste. That means, I guess, where they're supposed to have a lot of babies. But, and the other one's called the, and anyway, so somebody guessed. One caste that was very funny to me was the Dobi caste. Dobi actually means, for those of you, does anyone know what Dobi means?
Washing
clothes. I said, that would be embarrassing to be a member of that caste, isn't it? What's your caste? The clothes washer. You know, I mean, Hare Krishna. You know, someone said, you know, hello, who are you? Clothes washer. So actually, they've come up with these thousands and thousands of castes. And then, you know, and actually they force people to get married in their same caste. Just like I was, have some friend who was a member of the Prajapati caste in Gujarat. And so his parents force him to marry this girl. Practically, not a gunpoint exactly, they don't do that, but they use guilt. That those of you who were born in Jewish families may be familiar with this, but they use guilt. Gujarati families are very similar to Jewish families in their techniques of manipulating the children. And they said, you know, your uncle has a heart condition, I have a kidney failure, and if you let you do this. Anyway, so what happened is that, you know, he was there, you know, it's practically like a shotgun marriage. Shotgun not in the sense that he did anything wrong with the lady before him, but he was forced. So anyway, he got married to the lady, and, you know, they shipped him back to a different country. I'm not going to mention what country because I don't want any of you guessing. It's not America. So none of you know the persons. And, you know, there he is in this house with this lady who has absolutely no compatibility with. And he's just freaking out. And then all the devotees, of course, they're into this very much imposed hierarchy type of thing. They're going over his house, preaching to him, telling him, you've got to accept this lady. She's your lawfully wedded. And he's looking at her. He can't relate to her. And so they make a little plan. Well, let's leave him alone with her. Maybe he'll become attached to her. You know, lust will come out, you know, or something like that. So they leave him alone with her for a month, and, you know, nothing works out. You know, he doesn't fall in love. In fact, he gets really angry. So, anyway, so, I mean, she's a very nice person, too. We're not denying that. She's actually a devotee, very, very nice person. But, you know, just because of this, you know, this hierarchy, this caste, you know, getting married, someone married to the same caste, which actually has no compatibility with the person who they get married to. So right now he's just like in complete anxiety, he's threatening to commit suicide, and all these other things are occurring. So this caste thing is very interesting because in India, the Christians and also the Muslims took advantage of this when attempting to convert people to different religions. Did you know that? They actually said, look, join us, and there's no caste, especially to the Dalits, or what's called untouchables. The Christians, as I said, the Christians and the Muslims, they took advantage and said, join us, and, you know, we have no caste. But actually what they discovered is after the persons joined the Christian religion, they also kept the caste. After the persons joined the Muslim religion, they still kept the caste, which is quite interesting. So anyway, so they attempted to lure people by this attempt at, you know, equality between everybody. And it's, of course, that didn't work. And even the government, they impose... the government has to have some rules where they try to give preferential hiring and preferential schooling to what's called the scheduled caste. Scheduled caste means like the lower caste, the untouchables, and things like that. So this is all crazy. Actually, each person should be considered as an individual according to his guna and karma. In fact, Chanaka Pandit actually says that one should accept a woman from a lower caste if she has the right qualities. And, of course, we can understand he doesn't say this, but we can understand one should reject a woman from a higher class if she doesn't have the right qualities. You know, high class, low class. But, of course, nowadays, as we mentioned before, that we also have a caste system in America, but it's based on money. Whereas the caste system in India was based on, was actually based on birth. The caste system in Europe was also based on birth. Isn't it? Like if you're born into a blacksmith family, then you're brought up to be a blacksmith. Blacksmith, for those of you who don't know what that means, doesn't mean a black person. It means a person who puts shoes on horses. Not the type of shoes that you would wear. See, many of you don't know what horseshoes are, but anyway. But there's these U-shaped things that you nail to the horse's foot. It's not that you go like Birkenstocks on the horses. Anyway, so there is a distinction according to quality. So here, Lord Brahma is actually being accused of being unintelligent because he married Daksha's daughter to this person who was actually unqualified. And actually, it's quite interesting that here Daksha is also considering a person's qualities rather than the birth, because Lord Shiva is actually the son of Lord Brahma also. Rudra appeared from the forehead of Lord Brahma. So here he's considering qualities. So he has it half right. But he's looking at qualities from an external viewpoint. And the reason he's finding fault is because of his own particular needs for profit, adoration, and distinction. As we mentioned yesterday, Daksha is very much into sex life, which is manifested as in a subtle form as profit, adoration, and distinction. So that's really why he's finding fault, and that's why he's getting angry. And so this anger is another topic that's mentioned here, because when one's angry, one says things that they may later regret. Sometimes people say, you know, forgive me, I was angry when I said that. I couldn't control myself. So what is anger? This is another very interesting thing to analyze. Anger, of course, is analyzed or mentioned by Krishna in many different places. Of course, one of the gateways of going to hell, lust, anger, and greed. But what is the etiology or the source of anger? The source of anger, according to Krishna, is dayato vishyak pum sam sangostape sho bajayate sangat sanjayate kama kamakrota bajayate. It comes from frustration. Frustration because someone has some desire. He's meditating on sense objects, so he desires that particular sense object. Now, desire doesn't come from just like the ether. Desire comes because someone has some need. Just like if I'm meditating on a particular type of food and I desire it, I must also have the need for food. You understand? It's not that, you know, if I'm not hungry, I can meditate on anything, any type of food. I'm not going to become interested in that particular type of food or attached to that type of food. Or if someone is not lusty, they can meditate on anything and they're not going to try to enjoy that particular sense object. Just like sometimes we're walking by in the airport and there's all these pictures of the women that are airbrushed on the magazines. I don't know if you've ever seen that. Anyway, airbrushed, you know, they try to make them look like demigoddesses. Try to make the Rakshasinis look, anyway, the people on the earth planet look like demigoddess. And you just look at it and say, this is disgusting. Or you sometimes, you know, we're in the airport, and we spend a lot of time in the airport, and there's some woman who's put some perfume on. We have smelled the perfume, and I practically regurgitate. But if someone is lusty, then it's just like, you know, they fall in love, or they become entranced with the magazines. You know, so in other words, there has to be some particular need that someone has before they become agitated by a particular sense object. I mean, that's practical. It's practical. You're not going to become agitated. Just like I can look at the floor all day long and meditate on the floor, I'm not going to become attached or angry unless someone just like tries to destroy the floor. But then it's not because of the floor itself. It's because I'm worried about money. But you know, there's certain things you just don't become attached to unless there's a need behind those things, right? Like I can meditate on, yeah, anything. Anything, you know, this cushion, you know, all day long contemplating sense objects. And I'm not going to become attached or angry. I mean, you can do anything with the damn cushion you want. It's not going to bother me as long as I have something to sit on when I come to class. So there has to be some need behind the whole thing. That's really important. So anyway, the point is that this Daksha, he had a need because he was a conditioned soul. Even though he's a very exalted conditioned soul, he's able to see Krishna, mentioned elsewhere in the Bhagavatam. I mean, that's very exalted, but still, you know, he has his material desires. So because of that need, which was subtle sex life, and that need was not being fulfilled, therefore his anger was stimulated by Lord Shiva not standing up and receiving him properly. But it wasn't Lord Shiva's fault that he was angry. His anger was simply stimulated by Lord Shiva's action or inaction in this particular case. And what he did, as is so common when someone gets angry, is that he finds fault with the person or gives the person a name. Here he's giving Lord Shiva a whole bunch of nice names here. Devoid of all cleanliness, heart filled with nasty things, you know. Lives in a filthy place, he's a madman. He does all these crazy things. He's not clean. He's not auspicious. He's most mad. He's dear to crazy beings. I mean, all these different names he's giving. So that's what happens when we get angry, when we're frustrated. We give names to people. You understand? Or not even names to people. We give names to our car. We give names to our computer. We give names to our mobile phone. We have all these wonderful names for everything. It's stupid mobile phone. How is a mobile phone stupid? I never met an intelligent mobile phone. What to speak of a stupid mobile phone. So we give name. We just you have to do that. I mean, that's part of getting angry. It's part of the process, the sadhana of getting angry. You've got to give a name to the thing or person you're getting angry with. I mean, even if you don't voice it, it's there anyway. Or sometimes we even get angry with ourselves. I'm a jerk. And so, therefore, you've given yourself a nice name. You've reinitiated yourself. Jerk or something like that. So anyway, so he's given a name, and then he's gotten angrier and angrier and angrier based on that name. So what he should have done is taken responsibility for his own anger and said that, you know, I'm angry because, you know, I actually want appreciation. I need love. And appreciation. And Lord Shiva's not acting in such a way as to satisfy me, so let me find some other strategy. Anyway, I'm sure he had plenty of other strategies because his wife certainly liked him. He had a lot of children by her. And so he should have dealt with it like that. Instead, he commits offenses. And by committing offenses, not only against Lord Shiva, but against Lord Brahma, he's actually destroying his spiritual life and, as we see later on, creating a lot of problems for himself materially too. So these are some of the things that are happening here. So I guess that's all I can comment on right now. So any questions or comments about any of these things? Yes.
Yeah, I was just thinking about what you're talking about, profit adoration and distinction, and the fact that we hear about the fact that it's not so productive for spiritual life, at least advancing it.
Yeah. Realize what need, just be honest about it. Realize and fulfill those needs in a Krishna conscious dharmic way. That's all. Yeah, just be honest. Just like we were mentioning the other day that, you know, sometimes we find even sannyasis who are not, you know, people have taken sannyas prematurely who are in denial that they have these certain needs. And as a result, these needs come out in sublimated ways. And, you know, creates havoc, you know, instead of, you know, going after the opposite sex, which would obviously not so good. Actually, we read about one sannyasi went to a rave yesterday. Anyway, so, you know what a rave is? I've never even been to one. I don't even know what it is. What is it?
A rave.
R-A-V-E. What?
Well,
if it's Krishna conscious and they're chanting Hare Krishna and dancing.
There is a Hare Krishna.
Yeah, I mean, it's all right if you, I guess without the scratching or something like that. You know, scratching with the records. But anyway, so we find this, I mean, just like in my position as GBC, we're dealing with cases all the time of, you know, sannyasis and people who happen to do things that are not really fitting with their position, to say the least. You know, sannyasi wearing sunglasses and shorts at a rave. Or, you know, anyway, I won't even mention it. I mean, that's the least of it that I had to deal with. So, and then figuring out what to do with the whole situation. The whole point is that someone was not in touch, or they were in denial of their actual needs. So it's really important that people actually be in touch. It doesn't mean that someone is less spiritually, it just means that everybody's different. That's all. It's not, we shouldn't be going around criticizing grahasthas because, you know, they have a need for that sort of association and things like that. You know, it's just different. But the main thing is what? You want to go to a rave or?
No.
May not be good for you. What? Yeah, well, anyway, let's deal with this first. So, getting back to the point is that we find all these people taking sannyas, or not even taking sannyas, but, you know, just like taking initiation, you know, second initiation, without being really in touch with their needs. So it's really important to encourage people to be introspective, not simply testing people for some time. Otherwise, you know, we'll find a lot of people with anger and political stuff, you know, because political stuff actually comes from emotional needs. You know, why is a person a politician? Because he has certain needs, you know, a person harshly criticized. We find sannyasis that are so heavy, you know, say, you know, if you use toilet paper, you're fallen. You know, they actually publish a book. When sannyasi publishes a book, you know, it's just, if you don't use your hand instead of toilet paper, you know, then you're actually disobeying Prabhupada and falling down from the regulated principles of devotional service. So, I mean, I just wonder, you know, what sort of movement I'm in. But, or you find people who are really ritualistic, you know, who just like get, you know, so it's actually due to them being out of touch with their needs or being improperly situated. So it's important for everybody to be properly situated and honest about whatever, you know, needs you have. Of course, I mean, everybody has needs for food, air, unless you're actually like Dhruva Maharaj, you know, who can breathe once a month or something like that. I haven't attained that position yet. So I need air, you know, I need food. No, maybe not the same opulent food you all need, but anyway. It's not that you actually need opulent food. That's an illusion you have. So, but, you know, we need tasty food like that. So we have to be honest about these things. Otherwise, you know, then you just get angry with people. So, anyway, so this is important. So if we're honest about our needs and we act to fulfill those needs, then we won't have this social dysfunction, anger, politics, or at least this will be minimized in a society. And then we'll have, you know, better relationships with people. Otherwise, you know, then the relationships between the members of the Krishna conscious movement or the members of any society will be dysfunctional. The society will not progress or be stable. So I think our Pujari had a question about anger. Yeah.
There's like a feeling, it's not like a violent anger, but like sometimes we feel like pain or we feel a little bit of anger, but we feel like I can't stand to see how this person is treating this other person. So how do we...
Because we have a need to protect. That's a natural need too, like for the welfare of others. And especially that need becomes more pronounced as one becomes Krishna conscious. That's actually what compassion is. That, as we were mentioning yesterday, the sign of one sign of spiritual advancement, and there's many signs, and you know, another sign is that one becomes attached to hearing and chanting. But another sign of spiritual advancement is that one cannot refrain from trying to help people who are in a situation, you know, whether they're being abused or whether they're neglected or whatever, you know. So that's a need. It's definitely a need. and the anger comes from that. So if we identify or connect the anger with that, then the need can be expressed or let us say, not only expressed, but the need can be fulfilled in a very productive way. Because if we're just getting angry at people who mistreat others, it doesn't really help. You know, we have to figure out a strategy. We have to have a cool... It's important to have a cool mind. Like Prabhupada said, it's better to have warm legs than a cool mind. He said that to a lady who had just like, you know, short shorts or something like that. So it's important to have a cool mind in order to be able to fulfill our needs. You can't fulfill needs with a hot head. It just doesn't work like that. You end up actually creating more problems, offenses, and then you've never fulfilled the need anyway. You know, what is it? I've lost my caste, but my hunger is not fulfilled. So you have to really figure out how to, because you have a need to have a cool head to think things out clearly. So if you see someone being attacked, abused, mistreated, neglected, whatever like that, then understand it's actually my need to help this person. So therefore, let's figure out a strategy. So in other words, you have to go through some sort of exercise to cool down your brain. Because it's, you know, hot-headedness never works in any situation. I mean, even in the army, just like we read about this recent thing, the pirates, they captured a captain of a ship, American ship. So what happened is that, anyway, the captain sacrificed himself for the rest of the crew members, which is very heroic. We admire that. And so the captain was being kept on this little lifeboat. Not little, it was about 30 feet long. But anyway, covered lifeboat by three pirates. It's like a romantic story, like the Pirates of Penzance. So anyway, and there was one pirate who was on the U.S. Navy boat. And so what happened is that these pirates, they were getting more and more impatient and, you know, let's get the money. Because some pirates are interested in money, usually not in killing so much, but just in money. It's a good business in that part of the world, that is Somalia, around the coast of Somalia. So anyway, so they were interested in that. And so they were getting impatient and they had an AK-47. For those of you who don't know what that is, that's a rifle. An assault rifle. They were pointing it at this captain, the American captain who was a hostage. And so at the same time they were on the Navy boat, there were something called seals. Seals doesn't mean, you know, you know, the seals. But these are people who are trained up, you know, special forces, but not trained up to be hotheads. You know, generally you think of soldiers, they're just hot-headed, they run into the battlefield screaming and yelling, you know, just thrashing out in all directions. And you see that in that movie, The Mahabharata, you know, that's what you see, like the soldiers going. But, you know, real soldiers don't do that. So they're actually trained for years to be cool-headed. And they're called, this particular branch is called their sharpshooters. That means they're trained just like to really concentrate, be cool-headed. And so this boat was 75 feet away, and was rocking in the ocean, and there were three, not terrorists, pirates, and some of them were behind windows. And so what was decided, these three sharpshooters should shoot simultaneously at the three terrorist heads. You know, can you imagine hitting a target 75 feet away? I mean, I've shot a rifle before, and I know it's difficult, even if the target's not moving. And so the boat was going like this. You know, the sea was really rough. And so they were very cool-headed, and in 1 second, simultaneously, they pulled their triggers, and the three heads of the pirates were blown off. Not blown off. Hit, you know, with the bullets. They weren't blown off, anyway. So they were hit, but it was a very cool-headed action to accomplish a goal. Instead of what the French did previously, they had some pirates who took some of their people hostage, and so the French attacked. You know, French are sometimes not known for being cool-headed. So, and so some of the hostages were killed at the same time. You understand? I'm not saying they made, you know, anyway, I don't want to analyze the whole thing, but I'm just saying it's important to be cool-headed. And so the Americans, they accomplished their goal. The only people who hurt were the pirates. Now, on the other hand, now the pirates are getting angry at the Americans, but that's a different subject matter, you know, for saving the hostage. I mean, that doesn't even make sense right there. But in any case, the point I'm making is that because they were cool-headed, they accomplished their goal. They just went flailing like with machine guns, you know, attacked with a SWAT team. It wouldn't have worked. But these were people who trained for years and years and years and years. And just 6 months of sharpshooter school, what to speak of, you know, years of SEAL, Navy SEAL training. So we should actually be cool-headed like that when accomplishing or dealing with our particular needs and also accomplishing the mission of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Then we'll be successful. I'm not saying we should join the Navy SEALs.